Morning. My name is Daniel York. We're going to go ahead and get started. I'm with GSA's Office of Government-Wide Policy. As you just heard, the session is going to be recorded for note-taking purposes, although we will work with OSDP and GSA comms to try to get the recording and or the notes posted to the public in a meaningful way. Still working on some of the logistics on how to go about doing that. So as you can probably already tell, everyone here is currently muted. At the end of the session, we are going to have a Q&A period where folks will raise their hand and we can unmute you from there. In the meantime, if you do have questions throughout the event, you can feel free to post them in the chat and we can either respond directly or ask the question to our OMB colleagues. Unfortunately, because of White House rules and technical stuff, they're unable to actually view the chat directly, so we'll have to relay that for them. We're also going to be having transcripts at the bottom of the page so that the folks that want to read what's going on will have that available to them. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dominic Beamer with OMB, Office of Science Technology Policy. Dominic, take it away, sir.
Thank you, Dan. Hi, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for attending today's session and for your continued support of our open government initiative. As Dan mentioned, I'm Dom Beamer. I'm a White House Leadership Development Fellow in the Office of Science and Technology Policy, or OSTP. OSTP works to harness the power of science, technology, and innovation to achieve America's greatest aspirations and tackle our biggest challenges. This work plays an important role in President Biden's mandate for the federal government to design and deliver services with a focus on the actual experience of the people meant to receive these services. And we should deliver these services more equitably and effectively, especially for those who have been historically underrepresented. The president has been clear that strengthening democratic process requires providing direct lines of feedback and mechanisms for engaging the American people in the design and improvement of federal government programs, processes, and services. These priorities are what we'll be talking about today, specifically progress toward the five commitments to transform government service delivery. With that, I want to turn it back over to Dan York, the Director of IT Data Transparency at GSA's Office of Government-Wide Policy, to talk about the implementation and tracking of the government commitments, go over the agenda for today, and introduce our speakers. Dan, I'll pass it back to you.
Good morning again. My name again is Daniel York. I'm with GSA's Office of Government-Wide Policy. GSA has been working to institutionalize long-term support for the open government work. We'll be providing more details on how this is going to work later in the summer. But now that we have an increased budget, we also have increased staff through the FY23 budget appropriation process, we can really build up this program and provide the public with increased transparency into our activities. This builds on GSA's existing role in supporting the executive councils and other work we do with the White House and the government-wide efforts. GSA's Office of Government-Wide Policy, also OGP, not to be confused with the Open Government Partnership, provides forward-thinking policy, guidance, and best practices on federal property, technology, mission support operations, and sustainable solutions to current and future government, to solutions for the current and future government. Representatives from OMB and GSA will provide updates today on various commitments. After the presentations, there will be some time for feedback on answering questions from the chat. I also mentioned at the end, you could raise your hand and we can unmute you from there. Today's session will be the first of a number of planned engagement sessions over the next few months dedicated to reporting progress towards implementation of the various National Action Plan commitments outlined in the fifth National Action Plan. These sessions will offer the opportunity for civil society, stakeholders, and the public to provide feedback, ask questions regarding the challenges and opportunities related to those implementations. Some of you provided key input during the co-creation process of the fifth National Action Plan, which is great. Thank you for that. This released this past December. For those of you that are perhaps newer to the process, the fifth National Action Plan lays out five general themes. The first theme is improving access to government data, research, and information. The next is to increase civic space and engage the public that this supports at the moment. The third would be transform government service delivery. The fourth be counter corruption and ensuring government integrity and accountability to the public. And the fifth, lastly, certainly not least, but last, to ensure equal and equitable justice under the law. Before we actually jump into today's sessions, I did just want to reiterate that the session is being recorded. Folks should be seeing the live transcripts at the bottom. If not, please let us know in the chat and we can go from there. Though some of you did submit questions in advance, which we really appreciate, we're able to build those into the presentations and ask, make sure we address your questions. If you don't see them, please ask them again in the chat or at the end, raise your hand. We'll endeavor to answer all the remaining questions in the chat through email or in the notes itself, if and when we get those posted, so we continue the discussion beyond today's session. I believe most of you received the invite for this through the Open Government Secretariat GSA email address. My staff, I'm sure, could post that in the chat for you. If you do have questions that come up or you don't want to ask during the meeting itself, feel free to email that mailbox so that several of us at here at GSA can coordinate the answers and get back to you. If you have comments on the process itself, areas or ideas for implementation or tracking of progress for the national action plans, either the current one or future, we are hosting a session specifically on implementation of like how to display the national action plan, how to display progress. We have a separate session on that scheduled for July 7th. From 2 to 3 Eastern time. There'll be a little bit more of that at the end, I believe, as well. And with that, I'm gonna jump right into today's speakers. So we have Todd Rubin with the Customer Experience Desk Officer with the Office of Management of Budget. Shabia Dalal, with the Senior Equity Fellow with Office of Management and Budget. Phil Ashlock, the Director of Data and Analytics with GSA's Technology Transformation Service. And Alex Chattel Fernandez, Senior Equity Fellow, Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, Office of Management and Budget. And so with that, let me start to present my screen. Something like that. I'll go into... There we go. All right, I think folks can see my screen now, and I'll hand it over to our colleagues.
Thank you so much, GSA team. So we're excited to present on the 5 commitments today. And we'll start off on that next slide, Dan, where we have a quote from President Biden from 2021. So in his first address to Congress, President Biden shared the statement that you see on our screen. We have to prove democracy still works, that our government still works and can deliver for our people. It's absolutely critical that government continues to deliver for the American public. The U.S. government interacts with literally millions of Americans every day and does so at the most critical moments of their lives. And so in this respect, the U.S. government is arguably the world's most complex service delivery organization. Next slide, please. In too many of these interactions, however, Americans are faced with navigating a tangled web of government services, offices, acronyms, and phone numbers that stand between them and the services they depend on. President Biden said it best in the signing of the executive order, in which he said you shouldn't have to know how to know, just to be able to get what you need from the government. That's exactly what we're trying to fix, and we have a clear vision for the future of government service delivery. Next slide. And that vision is that every interaction should be simple, seamless, and secure. Every interaction should be on par with experiences everywhere, including the private sector. And on this next slide, we're going to talk about some of the history that this customer experience initiative builds on. So Dan, if you could take us to the next slide where we look at building on previous efforts from previous administrations. And this is also in response to a question we received in advance. What do you think are the most important lessons learned from the service transformation efforts of previous administrations? So really, since the first Bush administration, there has always been an initiative focused on the customer in some respect. What I would emphasize, though, is that recently there has been a switch in focus from service to experience. We are focused on customer experience, and it's an important difference. So customer service focuses on a specific interaction with an individual to resolve a specific issue. We're going beyond that. Customer experience is the entire relationship with a service. It's the end-to-end experience, and it embodies the concept of keeping the experience of the individual at the heart of all parts of our work. And it's with that mandate that I want to transition to talking about the first commitment. Next slide, please. Commitment 1 is about implementing the executive order as a mechanism to do just that. And I'll briefly talk through the components of the executive order that enable us to do this work successfully. Next slide. At a high level, executive orders are really useful to clarify definitions, require the government to take action, and so on. And so our executive order on customer experience has four substantive sections. Section 4 identifies near-term commitments from agencies, specific projects that deliver wins for the American public. And so we have some quick wins already. For example, the Farm Loan Direct, the Farm Loans Program's direct loan application went from 10 forms to one. As Alex will tell you about, this is part of a broader initiative to simplify forms in government. You may have seen the press about that earlier this week. It's a huge win and very much part of this executive order. Section 5 of the EO serves to establish this longer-term framework for management of government services in a new way called life experiences. And this is an entirely new model, which I'll elaborate on in a bit. Then we have Section 6, which essentially codifies much of what had already been communicated to agencies in guidance about a long-term accountability framework for what we call high-impact service providers. Again, I promise I will define that term in a bit. This is just for a high level of the executive order. And finally, Section 7 weaves customer experience principles into other important functions of government. So customer experience principles went into other executive orders, legislative requirements, ARP guidance. So those are the main sections of the executive order. Next slide. And so I promised I'd talk a bit about those life experiences. So as I mentioned, this is a new framework that puts individuals at the center, organizing principle for how agencies ought to work together. This slide shows five life experiences that represent critical moments in people's lives where we're working to make things easier, such as recovering from a natural disaster, having a child if you're a low-income person, as well as transitioning to civilian life, approaching retirement, and facing a financial shock. These are all experiences that millions upon millions of Americans can relate to. And while identifying moments to focus on is important, I want to talk through a little bit about the process it took to bring together multiple agencies to collaborate around these experiences for the first time in this way. Next slide. Okay, so there are many accountability measures and governance structures that have been critical for the success of these life experiences projects. I want to highlight here the charter as an example of that public accountability. These public charters have served a critical purpose for enabling a large and diverse group of stakeholders across multiple agencies to establish a shared vision for success, and they've made that vision public. So this helps hold people accountable for the work and builds rapport for ongoing collaboration. Next slide. Public accountability has been an extremely important part of this new model. And one of the biggest milestones of this life experiences work is that we were able to share all of our discovery work, such as journey maps and customer profiles, direct quotes, publicly. This was a huge moment because never before, from the voice of OMB and the White House, have we shared such in-depth content of direct customer pain points. This was really about us speaking with real people to learn what problems they experienced during these critical moments of their lives and where we as a government need to do better. And this was really meaningful as well because getting our organizations comfortable with releasing this type of authentic discovery work, even when there wasn't a solution immediately readily available, was really new and difficult. Next slide. So we've moved into different phases of implementation, and most recently, milestones, deliverables, and pilot measures for these life experiences are included on our website, performance.gov. Encourage you all to check it out. Next slide, please. So commitment 2 is about improving the service delivery of those high-impact service providers that I mentioned earlier. Next slide. So we received a question in advance, when will the government begin tracking service delivery? So I'll get to that question. First, some context. We have a list of what we call 35 high-impact service providers. So these are the agencies and sub-agencies that serve either the greatest number of people or have outsized importance to particular populations. So we came up with this list of 35. That is where we're focusing our efforts. Next slide. And just as an example of what a high-impact service provider, the Social Security Administration, the VA, IRS, the ones, again, that you think of as being the most important ones on a from a service delivery perspective. And we treat our accomplishments of high impact service providers similarly to how I talked about life experiences. We publish public and transparent updates about the progress they are making. Next slide. So there are a couple of important milestones and deliverables that high impact service providers have to meet. We lay that out in our guidance document. I encourage you to check out OMB, it's called OMB Circular A11 Section 280. I'm sure we can provide a link to you all afterwards so you can check out what those specific deliverables are. The point is to assure an ongoing accountability framework to make sure that the high impact service providers are meeting their mandates to serve the American people effectively. Next slide. So to get directly to that question that we heard about, which was, are we tracking performance? The answer is yes. And so we have this important exercise where every single high impact service provider is supposed to develop a survey where they measure trust in government. The point is every interaction between the American public and federal agency is an opportunity to build trust. We want to make sure that trust is being built. So every single high impact service provider needs to develop a survey and disseminate that survey so that they can measure how well they are doing in building public trust. We're also, next slide, please. We are sharing that data on our website, performance.gov. We'll provide a link to that afterwards as well. We've noted progress. Historically, the government has lagged behind the private sector in customer experience. We know that. But we're making progress slowly but surely. We have some signs of encouraging signs the last couple of years. We've seen an upward trend in satisfaction between 2022 and 23 for some of our largest service providers in government. So we have a lot of work cut out for us for sure. But we are making progress. And if you just turn to the next slide, which I think will be the last or one more after this, we want to make it as easy as possible to collect good data from the public, to get high quality data. And that is the work that we are continuing to do. And with that, I want to hand it over to Shaibia now, who's going to talk about commitment for the equity action plans.
Thank you, Todd. If you go to the next slide. So President Biden's day one executive order 13985 directed the federal government to advance an unprecedented and ambitious whole of government equity agenda. And as part of this order, federal agencies were called upon to develop and implement equity action plans that advance racial equity and support for underserved communities through the federal government. Over 90 agencies, including every cabinet agency, are implementing equity action plans that represent specific agency commitments to reduce inequities and to promote equitable outcomes in communities. These plans were made public to promote transparency and accountability for their commitments. And since the release of these plans last year, OMB and other components of the White House have continued to support agencies with implementation. So where are we today? I'm going to tell you with the slide in front of you. I sadly don't have the time to update you on the exciting work that's happening at all 92 of the agencies that submitted equity action plans, but I invite you to visit whitehouse.gov/equity to read more about accomplishments that agencies have made since. I did want to give you just a sampling of how agencies are delivering on their equity mandates by advancing economic justice, community investment, health equity, and more. So as one example, the Department of Transportation launched the Interagency Thriving Communities Network, which provides technical assistance and capacity building resources for infrastructure projects to urban, rural, and tribal communities that have experienced a history of economic distress and systemic disinvestment. The General Services Administration established dedicated contracting pools for historically underutilized business zones, women-owned small businesses, and service-disabled veteran-owned small businesses to support their participation in the rapidly growing federal marketplace for IT services. The Department of Justice awarded almost $57 million to advance racial equity in the criminal justice system. This will support efforts at multiple levels of government to establish more effective and equitable criminal justice policies and practices, which include strategies to reform pretrial processes and address wrongful convictions. Meanwhile, the Department of Defense is taking both immediate and long-term actions to help strengthen the economic security and stability of service members and their families. And this includes actions to help military families secure affordable basic needs, improve access to quality, affordable childcare, and enhance employment opportunities for military spouses. The Department of Housing and Urban Development launched a new housing counseling tool that provides customer service in over 200 languages. This helps ensure that those with limited English proficiency are able to meaningfully access housing counseling programs and services, something that's key to reducing barriers and promoting fair housing. And then the last example, the Department of Health and Human Services. They've approved 35 states and DC to extend continuous postpartum coverage through Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program as part of their efforts to eliminate pregnancy-related health disparities and improve health outcomes for parents and infants across our country. Next slide. So advancing equity work, including some of the commitments in agency equity action plans, can also require funding and a few submitted questions on how this work is reflected in the budget. Every year when we release the budget, we also release fact sheets on how the president's budget improves customer experience and service delivery, the things that Todd just talked about, and also how the budget advances equity. You can visit whitehouse.gov/OMB to check out the full fact sheet from March, but here are just a few highlights from the historic equity investments made in the president's budget for fiscal year 24. So the budget expands workforce training and career-connected learning that provide pathways to good jobs. This means funding to expand free community college, free tuition for in-demand job training programs, and then also apprenticeships for pathways to careers in high demand industries like construction, clean energy, and semiconductor manufacturing. The budget also supports economic opportunity in rural and tribal communities. So as one example, it includes resources to expand the Rural Partners Network, which is an all of government program that works with rural and tribal communities and helps them get resources and funding to create local jobs, build infrastructure, and support their long-term economic stability. The budget also advances environmental justice by providing funding for efforts to upgrade drinking water and wastewater infrastructure nationwide, with a focus on decreasing health disparities in communities that have historically been overlooked. The budget also provides resources to strengthen federal civil rights enforcement. This means things like police reform, the prosecution of hate crimes, and the enforcement of voting rights. And the budget seeks to prevent evictions by investing in funding that will reform state and local eviction policies and enhance access to legal counsel and various forms of rent relief. So there's a lot that's happened since the equity action plans came out, but we know that many communities still face unacceptable barriers to realizing the full promise of America. And you may be wondering what's next. And I will tell you with the next slide. So advancing equity work, the president has always said, is not a one-year project. It's a generational commitment that will require sustained leadership and partnership with all communities. And to strengthen the federal government's equity mandate, President Biden signed a second executive order on equity in February of this year. It builds on the first executive order and strengthens the federal government's ability to address the barriers that underserved communities continue to face and help us shape a nation in which all can participate, prosper, and reach their full potential. Next slide. So the new executive order 14091 does several different things. First, it directs agencies to produce an annual public equity action plan, which is submitted with the agency's annual budget submission in September of each year to the White House. It also requires agencies to build and resource agency equity teams and to designate senior leaders accountable for implementing this work. The executive order requires agencies to improve the quality, frequency, and accessibility of their community engagement and to consult with impacted communities in agency decision-making. So not just in the development of the equity action plans each year, but also when it comes to things like funding opportunities and rulemaking. The executive order formalizes equity goals around procurement, which we know is a tremendous vehicle to addressing economic injustice, and it directs agencies to advance equitable rural and urban development. It also elevates a focus on civil rights, which includes addressing emerging threats like algorithmic discrimination and bias. The executive order directs the Subcommittee on Equitable Data, formerly known as the Equitable Data Working Group, to continue to improve data equity and regularly report on progress to both the White House and the public. And lastly, it directs the White House Office of Management and Budget to support agencies' equity action plans and invest in underserved communities each year through the formulation of the president's budget. Something that we've been doing already, as I previewed in my earlier budget slide, but this really puts it out there explicitly. There's a lot more to come on this work as we continue to deliver on our equity commitments. But I'm going to pause there and turn it over to my GSA colleague, Phil, to talk about a creative form of public engagement that the General Services Administration is pursuing.
Thank you, Shavia. Next slide. One more. So hi, I'm Phil Ashlock from GSA, and here to provide a little bit of an introduction to this commitment. Since it is relatively short and for accessibility purposes, I'll just go ahead and read it off to help sort of start this section. So this commitment is to experiment with new forms of public engagement to inform policy and program implementation within the sort of theme of the service delivery thematic area of this National Action Plan. So, you know, stories of possibility can provide opportunities to express emerging challenges and opportunities through creative and engaging narrative. At their best, stories can inform our collective imagination and create inclusive space for meaningful conversations, and then drive action to choose new possibilities. The GSA will work with civil society and experts in scenario planning and speculative fiction to develop a challenge and prize competition that will engage diverse and inclusive public participation to better define and imagine emerging challenges, opportunities, and possibilities for our shared future. So just to get a little bit back into the kind of impetus or the genesis of this, partly this idea kind of came through thinking about the co-creation process of the National Action Plan itself, to sort of explore more kind of non-traditional creative ways to solicit ideas and sort of plan for the future, and think sort of creatively about both how government can sort of look at challenges and opportunities, but also to sort of think through new ways to engage the public and civil society in helping to sort of surface those. It uses the term speculative fiction and scenario planning. There are a number of other terminologies that sort of refer to similar things, whether it's forecasting or insight sort of efforts. And in the context of service delivery, you know, this fits along with a lot of the methodologies people may be familiar with around user-centered design and journey mapping. So this is really kind of meant to be an even broader, more creative way to think through that through the form of short stories. But this really is a pilot, it's an experiment. And so we're just in many ways still getting started in sort of helping to design and develop this as a challenge, working with partners like challenge.gov, who does a number of other types of challenges in other areas. And so I won't be getting into a ton of detail about the sort of plan for this commitment. We are in the process of finalizing date for a public engagement session in the next month or so, likely in August. We have not quite finalized the date, where we'll be getting into more detail about the proposal for the shape and design of this challenge, working with a number of experts and stakeholders in this space, both within government and from other institutions. And then if you go to the next slide, we've kind of created a tentative timeline for this process. So we'll be posting a date for this engagement session focused on this, which will likely be in early August. That the rest of the timeline around this is subject to change, partly based on the sort of input we receive there. But the intent would be to have a series of iterative phases to develop, to help sort of engage the public around developing prompts and sort of potential framing parameters for vignettes to design and develop narratives around scenarios that may take place, 5 to 10 to perhaps even 50 years in the future, depending on how we want to frame this with all the sort of stakeholders. And there will likely be a combination of more open-ended and kind of focused prompts and there's also, I think, the hope that we could align the timeline to work within a school year and sort of involve a number of sort of broader participation in institutions that way. There are a number of institutions that, particularly in universities, that have full programs around this. So the Arizona State University, the Center for Science of the Imagination, is one that folks may be familiar with, who's also done projects like this with parts of government. And so we're also looking to kind of identify and engage a broader swath of partner institutions to be involved with this effort. So if you if you'd like to follow along on the sort of development of this project and be notified when we have this first engagement session, you can enter your information on the form that we have for this commitment on the Open Government website, and we'll drop a link to that in the chat. And we're looking forward to having more folks involved and hearing your questions and comments around this effort moving forward. So I think that's all that I have to share for now, and look forward to working with everyone. I think with that, we can go on to the next presenter.
Hey, Tommy. What's going on, Tom? Who we have presenting commitment 3?
And one moment, I'm having a technical issue over here. One sec.
Yes, sir.
I believe it was Alex Hurdle Hernandez. I know he's on another presentation. One sec, I'll see if we can get him over.
Certainly, perhaps we could take a moment then while we're waiting for Alex for folks to have questions as related to what's been discussed so far. If you have any questions either in the chat or if you want to come off mute, perhaps we can take a couple of those questions now. Again, just to make sure we're focused on the content for these commitments, not necessarily commitments in future public engagement sessions. Looks like I have one person with their hand raised. Alexis, can you handle that piece?
Hi, old and new friends. My name is Noel Hidalgo. I work primarily in New York City. I'm interested in understanding what the federal government's relationship to local practices in local municipal governments when it comes down to the more or less the data and the speculative fiction work. Just trying to understand like how you'd be working with local municipal governments and then also non-government actors like nonprofit organizations like Beta NYC. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Noel. I guess just in the context of the commitment that I was just discussing, at the moment we don't have a specific sort of partnership established to do that in an explicit way, but I think we could discuss opportunities to do that. I think the possibility of how this particular commitment could shape up in terms of the different institutional partners or similar efforts at the state and local level, I think it's possible that it could take the shape of sort of being aligned in parallel, but somewhat technically separate if there's an opportunity to have sort of a parallel type of effort that may be focused more specifically on the local level. But I think that's something I'd be happy to discuss with you and organizations like those you mentioned as we develop this. But really, this is meant to be an experiment and a pilot. So I think, this is also something that we can learn from. And if everyone finds it successful, I'll sort of iterate from there moving forward.
Before we go to the next question, Dom, is Alex back on? Or maybe George, come up and let us know when he is.
Yeah, hi Dan, it's Tom. It looks like Alex is back on, maybe just under a different name. I think he might have used a different link, but Alex, just checking in, is your audio working?
Of course, if it didn't, it'd be hard for him to answer.
yes, I just had to accept the unmute and on and ready to go.
Great. I'm sorry. We'll take the remaining hands. Just keep them up if you don't mind, and we'll get to them at the end of the presentation. For now, Alex, take it away.
Great. Thanks so much. And really appreciate everyone coming out virtually this morning to hear about the administration's work on improving the ways that people interact with government. So I wanted to talk through one of the commitments that we describe in the Open Government National Action Plan related to administrative burden reduction. So if we go on to the next slide, I'll share a little bit more about what I mean by administrative burden. So we know that in many social programs across our government, whether it's health insurance for low-income families, food assistance, or housing assistance, many eligible individuals aren't receiving these benefits. In some cases, as many as half of potentially eligible individuals are not receiving the benefits and services to which they are entitled. We also know from research that one important reason why are administrative burdens. Those are things like the time it takes to fill out a government form, to assemble necessary documentation, or to make multiple trips to a government office in order to establish that you are eligible and then go through the application process. Together, these are known as administrative burdens, and they also impose a substantial cost on people who do make it through the application process. It's a substantial time cost, it's a substantial financial cost in terms of lost wages, and in terms of the cost of assembling necessary documentation, paying for childcare, and it also imposes a substantial psychological cost, stress, anxiety, and even stigmatization as individuals run through these different hoops to access benefits to which they are entitled. The Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs in the Office of Management and Budget has committed to addressing these burdens through our role reviewing regulations and reviewing government forms. I'll talk more in a moment about the history of this initiative, which was launched last year, but I first wanted to say that earlier this week on Monday, we published a new report called Tackling the Time Tax that summarizes our progress in implementing this initiative across a range of government programs. And so we're really excited to be getting out the word about how this initiative is going and encourage you all to check out that report, which is available on the OMB OIRA White House page. And also if you Google Tackling the Time Tax as well, that'll come up. So if we go to the next slide, I wanted to just give a brief history of where this initiative came from and how it was launched. It was launched last year in April with the release of government-wide policy guidance, which, as I mentioned, builds on our role reviewing government forms under the Paperwork Reduction Act. And this guidance document, M2210, for those of you who know your OMB memorandum numbers, really calls on agencies to do two things. First, to do a more comprehensive job of assessing burdens when they are revising or creating government forms. And so this means not just taking into account the length of time it takes for an individual to complete a form, but also taking into account the beginning to end experience of filling out that form, including, for instance, the time it takes to assemble necessary documentation, to make trips to a government office, and even the psychological burden, like the stress and anxiety that individuals might experience at different steps in that process. So that's the first thing we're asking agencies to do when they submit their forms to us and as part of the process of reviewing paperwork. The second is to systematically reduce burdens through changes to forms or regulations or other process steps. And this guidance document, as well as another memo that we put out in December last year, provide a number of strategies that agencies can use to address administrative burden. Next slide, please. I wanted to provide a brief progress update that's also covered in the report that I mentioned about what we've been doing since the publication of this this guidance document and since the publication of the Open Government National Action Plan. The first thing we've been doing is incorporating this burden reduction focus into the regular review that we do of regulations and forms, and supporting our staff who are engaged in this work through internal training and resources, and collaborating with very closely with the folks you heard earlier on this call who are involved in customer experience work. We've also been working to support agencies in implementing this initiative. For instance, as I mentioned, we published a list of evidence-backed strategies that agencies can use to implement burden reduction, whether that's using plain language to change the way forms are designed or conducting consultations with members of the public to understand key pain points or burden points. We've also been convening a regular working group of agencies to discuss their experiences implementing this work. And last, we're holding agencies accountable through the Paperwork Reduction Act's information collection budget. So earlier this year, we issued a data call to agencies. That's a formal request for agencies to respond to us, asking them how they're completing implementation of this guidance and outlining their most significant burden reduction activities to us. And this data call really underpins the report that I mentioned that was released on Monday that we encourage you to check out. And we describe and summarize in that report over 100 initiatives from 20 agencies that have committed to burden reduction activities. Those include experiences as varied as filling out a form to apply for a farm loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to trying to access debt discharge if you are a disabled borrower from the Department of Education. So there are a variety of success stories. And I think crucially, we talk about not just the impact it has on the public, but how the agency implemented that burden reduction. For instance, talking about specific steps agencies are taking to consult the public, to change regulations, or to pull together research on best practices. So if you go to the next slide, please. I wanted to end by talking about some of the key strategies that we've surfaced from agencies through this data call and that are summarized in the report that we encourage you all to read that came out earlier this week. I won't go through them all, but I'll say that some of the most successful strategies we saw from agencies included automatically making individuals or families eligible for one program based on individual or family's eligibility for a related program. That's a strategy that the Department of Health and Human Services, for instance, took in making recipients of food assistance eligible for Head Start, for instance, and simplifying the process of those families qualifying for Head Start. Another important step is using plain language. The Department of Labor is undertaking a number of efforts to encourage states to adopt plain language in unemployment insurance forms, which often can include technical and highly complex language that can be difficult to understand. A third strategy that I wanted to lift up is partnerships with community-based organizations that have trusted relationships with members of the public. And I think another nice example of this comes from the Department of Labor that is creating partnerships between the Department of Labor, state UI or unemployment insurance agencies, and worker organizations or community groups to help get out the word about how to apply for unemployment insurance and provide assistance to individuals as they are completing those forms. So there are a variety of strategies, including those three, that I encourage you to check out in the report, as well as these case studies I mentioned from agencies such as DOL, the Department of Labor, the Department of Agriculture, Social Security Administration, Department of Education, Housing and Urban Development, and the Department of Homeland Security, among others. We're very excited, as you can tell, about this burden reduction work, and as highlighted in the National Action Open Government Plan, are going to be continuing to implement that through our work with the agencies, through the tools and resources that we're creating, and through accountability mechanisms like the data call to make sure that agencies are implementing this guidance and that we can report publicly on that kind of progress. So I'll stop there and turn things back over to Daniel and Dom.
Great. So I think that's the end of the assigned presentation. Dom, did you want to go through the appendix?
No, I think that's in the presentation, and I think it'd be prudent to start Q&A with the time we have left.
Wonderful. So we're, I just looked to my team. Are there any direct questions for this in the chat that you could read aloud? If not, we'll go to hands that were previously raised. All right, barring none, I think was Steven next or Alex? I'm afraid I was in my screen up, so it's hard for me to see.
Oh, we had Steven next. So wonderful. Steven, I'm going to go ahead and ask you to unmute.
Yes, this is Steve Buckley. Thank you for today's session. I'm the one who sent in the suggestion to learn about lessons learned from previous previous administration's attempts to improve the quality of government services and so forth and so on. And because a lot of the times everybody starts a new one and they go, well, those didn't work, so there's nothing to learn from how they screwed up, or how they dropped the ball, or how they didn't optimize their efforts, and why trust in government is continuing to trend in the wrong direction. So the main thing I would suggest is that having spent 25 years in D.C. and I worked at 5 different federal agencies and was involved in public involvement and so forth, is that one lesson I learned was that somebody said, well, no matter how many smart people you get in the room at the meeting, there's always more knowledge outside. So I would suggest, the thing that I would suggest is that the customer service inside group, that community you have, it's all bureaucrats. And maybe some friends that you've tapped on the shoulder and invited, but it should be more open. Occasionally that group, whoever those people are, that should be open. And to me, it's kind of ironic, just like, oh yes, we're very open to how people are thinking, except in our little cloistered community. So that needs to be opened up, because there are many people like myself who've gone through these previous things that want to make sure, don't forget this part, because that's how, you know. And just one example, the high impact service providers, when you do that and you don't have anything less than that, then that's not whole of government. You're cherry picking, siloing things, you know. So that's the idea, that it's, we start out with the good stuff, the cars being manufactured on the factory floor, but it doesn't quality approach doesn't apply to the rest of the organization. That's a major blind spot. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Stephen. I think is Alex was next. And if others have questions, if you go ahead and lower your hand, Stephen, unless you had a second question. Alex next, and if folks do have additional questions, please feel free to put them in the chat or to, like I said, raise your hand. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you for hosting this meeting. I was hoping that we'd be talking with you in June, but it's great that we're talking with you now. I'm wondering about the status of the police misconduct database. There was an order that President Biden put out to the Department of Justice that was supposed to be stood up by January. A lot of people in civil society are wondering about that. Also wondering when we're going to see the White House start leading on its own open government plan from OSTP to OMB. There are agencies across the U.S. government that are still following through on President Obama's executive order on open government, as opposed to the one on equity we heard about earlier. Are we going to see more updates across the board on open government? As wonderful as these efforts are on service delivery, on equity, they're not always related to transparency and accountability, which is what open government is fundamentally about. Will we see the administration, in terms of the White House and leadership there, be giving all of your work excellent cover and amplifying it through this really action and the power of our example in ways that restores the leadership of the United States and supports the efforts of people at USAID, DRL, the rest of the agencies, which are trying to use open government as an important part of our work building and supporting democracy around the world? Are we going to see that top-down leadership soon?
I might let our OMB White House folks answer some of that, but I do know, at least from the GSA perspective, we are absolutely ramping up efforts to do exactly that, making data more transparent, making the tracking more transparent, having increasing number of public engagement sessions as this one, and you see the other one scheduled, and still more to come. As to your specific questions about White House leadership, I might turn it over to, I don't know who, Dom, perhaps?
I think Alex might have a thought, and I can add on to that thought. I just need to maybe unmute Alex.
Yes. Okay. I have found my voice. Well, thanks, Stephen and Alex, for those great questions and for your continued engagement in this process. Let me start with Stephen's, because I think that's an area where I can speak most directly and responsively. And the first thing to say is, Stephen, I think your point is really well taken about the need for public engagement, community engagement throughout the process of undertaking the CX work, the burden reduction work that we've been talking about. And, you know, we at OIRA, for instance, in that guidance we sent out to agencies, highlighted really prominently that burden reduction needs to start with consultations with affected communities to understand where burdens are coming from, and then throughout the process, ensuring that the folks who are either eligible and receiving or eligible and not receiving benefits are part of the process of designing and testing potential solutions to that. And that's been one of the things that we've lifted up, including in the report that I encourage you to check out from Monday. We talk about how most of the successful reductions in burden described by the agencies in the report were driven by that kind of engagement. The last thing to say on this point is I would encourage you to come to the listening session next week on the 20th, where OIRA and OMB will be talking about broader strategies to foster more engagement, including in the regulatory process, where we also have a NAP commitment related to tools and guidance to agencies. So more to come on that next week. I also wanted to pause to see if Todd had more on the engagement front related to the CX workstream, as I know that's a big part of how they've been approaching it as well.
Thank you, Alex. Absolutely do have more to say on that. So Stephen, point certainly well taken about involving more than federal employees in the design of services and an input on our work. That's been a critical part of what we've done, actually. So you probably can't read the sign behind me as it's reversed on the video, but this is an example, and as part of our life experiences work, of how we as OMB staff actually spoke with real people. In this case, the Life Experience Project was having a child as a low-income person. And there are quotations that we got as part of this work, like, I was depleted in funds and I'm losing my mind. Like, I can't buy diapers. I can't buy any formula. Or when one woman was describing a benefits form she was trying to fill out, I think it was for WIC, not all the questions were clear enough. You can make mistakes, and they don't tell you there's a mistake in your form. Please correct this question. Or if you have questions, please contact us. You don't get that until the application is processed. This is input from real people outside of Washington, D.C., outside of the high-impact service provider community. So we take that really seriously. And also, I think this relates to your other question about how this work duplicates, perhaps, work from previous administrations, or how we might learn from previous administrations. That is probably one of the central lessons we've learned, is that these previous efforts have not been so focused directly on putting the person at the center of the process. And that's what we've learned, and that's what we're doing now. So outside input, absolutely critical to all aspects of our work.
Thank you, Todd. And Alex Howard, just briefly, I know today we're really focusing on transforming service delivery as a subject matter. We are getting a session on the books in September that focuses on the commitments around that police misconduct database. So I'd say stay tuned on our website for that event. And then also, I really encourage you to attend our session on how we'll track implementation of the commitments, because as you know, that database is one of the commitments that we will be tracking. So your input to how we do that would be helpful in making sure the information that you're looking for is something that we can provide. So with that, I know we have just a few minutes left. Dan, I'm going to give it back to you to manage the Q&A.
Great. We had a couple in the chat about the commitment database, some FOIA questions as well. Let's see, maybe we'll take one more from the phone with the remaining 4 minutes. Susan, as soon as we get it.
Hi there, Susan Harley with Public Citizen. I apologize, I was called away from my desk for something urgent. So you may have covered this, but I was curious as to whether, as part of your highlighting of high impact service provider Treasury/the IRS. You all are lifting up the program that we're very, very excited about starting in 2024 regarding the free direct file program. It seems to me that providing this online tool for tax filers will be quite a game changer. And so we're excited to elevate that with our membership and the broader public. So just curious to know, and apologies again if you did cover it on this call, how we can help to elevate that as a plank of this very important project of the government.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. So absolutely, that is an example of a high impact service provider making it easy for citizens to fulfill a critical function, filing their taxes, which I don't have to tell anyone on this call is not a process that anybody looks forward to. And I think that is an example of a potentially huge win. Of course, we need to look at the results, and as with everything we do, put people at the center of it, test it with people after it's launched, continue to refine it to make sure it really is working for everybody. But that's the kind of initiative that deserves to be in the spotlight and is sort of the sort of change at scale that we really like to see from all of the high impact service providers, really, and across government. So thank you for mentioning that.
Great. So just to answer one of the questions in the chat myself. So yes, our hope is to be able to post to work with OSTP and GSA Office of Strategic Communications to post both the recording of this video as well as the transcript and or meeting notes and or other useful tidbits, links to YouTube or to open.usa.gov. We got to figure out how best to do that still. But with that said, in a minute remaining, Don, did you want to close us out?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what we said at the top of the hour. Really, we really appreciate everyone's interactions with the Open Government Initiative. I know many of you helped us craft the National Action Plan. And I think, as Dan mentioned, we have this opportunity to really mature our process through the Open Government Secretariat through GSA. And so looking forward to many interactions with you. I think many of you have seen our updated schedule. We have a number of ways to interact with our process for reporting and to report out also progress on the different commitments in that fifth National Action Plan. So hoping to see your faces more often in the coming weeks. And again, just want to thank you all for your time.
Great. And with that, we are at the noon hour here on the East Coast. Thank you so much for everyone's time today. We really appreciate everyone's feedback, thoughts, the questions in the chat. I did post the link to our email address as well, if you didn't get a chance to ask the question you wanted. Thank you everyone very much, and we look forward to seeing you at the next session. Thank you all.
Thanks. Bye, guys.